This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. Here are just a few of the people we meet in the book 28, Stories of AIDS in Africa. There's AIDS counselor Prisca Mokolo of Zimbabwe, who was beaten bloody by her own family when she told them she had HIV. Alice Kidzanja, a nurse in Malawi, who estimates that 2,000 nurses she worked with or knew of have died of AIDS. And there's Lefa Kwele in Lesotho, who at age 12 had been so constantly sick he was only in third grade. But he's been thriving since he started getting pediatric AIDS drugs, and those drug names are some of the first English words he's learned. Nevirapine, efavirenz. Stephanie Nolan introduces us to these remarkable people in her book. They're people she's met as a reporter for the Toronto Globe and Mail. She's the only Western journalist dedicated exclusively to covering AIDS in Africa. Stephanie Nolan, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
And you write at the outset of the book that you call it 28 for 28 stories, one for every million people living with HIV/AIDS in Africa. But it could have been 26, 30, who knows how many.
Yeah, it is still at this point, unfortunately, very much a rough guessing game how many people there are living with the virus in sub-Saharan Africa. The sad truth is that probably 90% of people infected still have not had access to testing. And in lots of countries, they still haven't got the skilled people or the equipment to do a really good survey of how many people there are infected.
I know that the numbers of people in Africa who don't have access to drugs, that number is huge. But I was also very surprised to read about the numbers of ways in which generic, free for the patients drugs are getting in. And one of those places is in probably one of the hardest places to treat people, in the Democratic Republic of Congo. And you talk about a worker there named Christine Amisi, who runs what you call a miracle clinic.
It is. It's out of every AIDS project that I have visited in Africa, and at this point there are hundreds of them, this clinic is my favorite. It's on a little hill in the eastern Congo, and Congo is nominally at peace now, but has had, of course, decades of war, and still the eastern part of the country is largely in the hands of different militias and rebel groups. And Bukavu, where Christine lives, is periodically seized by one group or another. And when the efforts to bring treatment to Africa started a few years back, there were obviously safer, saner places that you could do this. But the organization Doctors Without Borders said there's so many civil wars, insurgencies, unstable areas in Africa, and people living with HIV in all of those, and you can't just write those people off. And so they set up this little clinic, and they hired Tina, who is a Congolese doctor, Christine, to run it. And they started doing AIDS treatment based not with all the things you would have in America, but relying on clinical diagnoses for the most part. And they have had astonishing success rates, and they have better survival rates than many clinics in America do. And even though rebels have invaded the town periodically, and Christine once had to... She has four little boys, and she got the boys out of her house and into a UN compound just as the rebels were climbing over her walls. But once she got to the UN compound, she left her husband and her sons there and walked back out past the concrete barriers, past the soldiers, to the clinic because, of course, with people with HIV, it's incredibly important that they take their drugs every day and that they have access to a steady supply of drugs so that they don't end up drug resistant. And Tina was not going to let this insurgency get in the way of doing her job. And they've kept it running through years now of periodic violence, and they have about 800 people on treatment, and they're all thriving.
And you're right. If AIDS could be treated here, it could be treated anywhere.
You could do it anywhere. And I think that's one of the great lessons out of Africa, is that treatment is a great example of something that everybody said couldn't be done. When I started reporting on this story full-time 4 years ago, there were fewer than 100,000 people on treatment in all of Africa. When I left Africa 2 weeks ago, there were 1.5 million people on treatment. That's a 13-fold increase in 4 years. That's the good news. The bad news is that that's still only a quarter of the people who are sick enough to need it today. But so many people said it couldn't be done, and it's been done all over the continent. It's been done even in the middle of a civil war in the Congo.
One of those people who said it couldn't be done was the then head of USAID, Andrew Natsios, and you quote him saying before Congress, talking about drugs that needed to be taken on a schedule, he said, in Africa, people do not know what watches and clocks are. They use the sun.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's been vilified for those remarks, and I imagine, given the opportunity, he might now put it differently. But I think it speaks to what we had as a perception of, you know, that you, we think of AIDS treatment as something that's a sort of heavily medicalized field, and that you needed laboratories and microscopes and all of these things. And most of the treatment projects that have been successful in Africa have originated with African activists who fought their own governments and who fought pharmaceutical companies to get access to the drugs, but who then what they rely on to make treatment successful is to create an environment where treatment adherence is a community undertaking.
Let's end on a hopefully bright note, and that's in Uganda, which has had great success in reducing the incidence of AIDS. And you profile a doctor there who's working on an AIDS vaccine. What did he tell you about what prospects he sees for that?
The doctor's name is Ponciano Kalibu, and he's a microbiologist and was the principal investigator on the first vaccine trial to be done in Africa. Ponciano is an optimist most of the time, and even so says that an HIV vaccine is, in a best case scenario, 10 years away. And I included Ponciano in the book because I think it's important to remind people we have a perception here in the West that the response to the pandemic is about what we are going to do to help, and that in fact, almost all of what's been done to respond to the pandemic has come from within Africa itself. And that includes not only the sort of grassroots efforts to take care of orphans or to nurse sick people, but also a lot of the cutting edge research. And Ponciano has done some amazing work showing that, you know, there are different strains of HIV, that a vaccine, one that would work in San Francisco, would probably also, might also work in Uganda, which was a really important breakthrough. And that work has been done in Uganda, and it's come from African scientists. He tries to remain optimistic. I think he does have days when he gets discouraged. And I think that those come when he has to go back to his community. Because, of course, for Ponciano, it's not just science, it's not just a job, but it's his family, the people that his friends and his relatives that he's lost to AIDS over the last 20 years. Whenever they try a vaccine candidate and it doesn't work, he needs to go back to his church group and his neighborhood association and say, I have really bad news. It didn't work. I need you to come and be volunteers in another medical trial. We have to keep looking. And I think that that really weighs on him. He wants so desperately to be able to stand up and say, yes, we found it. Obviously, that will be big news everywhere in the world, but it will be so important in Ponciano's town.
Stephanie Nolan, thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.
Stephanie Nolan's book is 28, Stories of AIDS in Africa. You can read an excerpt at our website, npr.org.